These are the laws that you're going to put in front of them. So Rashi says in the very, very beginning that Eila Mishpatim, the Eila, the Vav of the Eila, connects it to the previous Parsha. That last week's Parsha was talking about, in Parsha Yisro, it talks about Matan Torah, that it connects to say that just like all the Aseret Dibros were given on Har Sinai, so to all these Mishpatim were also given in Har Sinai. All the Mishpatim that are written in this week's Parsha are there. The problem with that is that in Parsha's Bahar, it says, it talks about Shemitah, about the seventh year when you lay your land fallow, and it mentions that, it says Bahar Sinai over there, that it was given on Har Sinai, and Rashi asks, why does it say Bahar Sinai? To tell you, just like Shemitah was given on Har Sinai, so too all the mitzvahs were written on Har Sinai. So why do you need Mishpatim then? What's the connection that, if every mitzvah was given in Har Sinai, then it's not just Mishpatim that was given in Har Sinai, it's every mitzvah that was given in Har Sinai. So why specifically is there Ve'ela HaMishpatim, that these Mishpatim that we say was given in Har Sinai, what's the point over here? Sort of Oyashev is an answer. It says the following. It says, every nation in the world has a set of laws and a type of constitution. They're all extremely similar to these Mishpatim that we have in this week's Parsha. These are very simple ideals that people have inside their nation. What happens if you hit somebody? What happens if you kill someone? What happens if you steal? What happens if you damage? All these types of things are right out there. They're extremely similar. So if you would look through this Parsha, and you wouldn't know that it was given by God, you would just say, oh, a person, if I would tell you that a human made up these laws, you could very easily say, oh, that makes sense. You know, because there are a lot of things here that we understand. They're very sicheldik, as they call them. Very much right in your head, and it's perfectly fine. But there's a big difference. There's a very, very big difference. These laws were not made by the sechel of a human being. They were made by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That these Mishpatim were purely from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we're saying. Don't think these Mishpatim were made up by Moshe Rabbeinu when they were in the Midbar. No, they were given on Har Sinai. Even though these Mishpatim look like they came from a human being, they look like this Parsha could have been made by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. It's not true. Every single one of these laws was not based on sechel, not based on what we have, even though they make sense to us. It was based on what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Now, what's the difference? Okay, I'll give you one example that sort of goes into this. Erevin Kuf Amud Beis. The Gemara Erevin Kuf Amud Beis says, had Bnei Yisrael not been given the Torah, had the Torah not been given to us, then we'd have learned Gezel. Where would we have learned Gezel from? From an animal. From what animal? Pretty good, the little Gemara.
Yeah.
From the ant. That's sneeze that you're thinking of. Sneeze is learned off on the cat. From an ant. Why? Because ants will never take away a piece of food that is in another ant's mouth. That's what the Gemara says. So we would have learned Gezel from ants. I'm not so sure how many people would have stared at ants and watched them to the point where they would have understood that there's no such thing as Gezel.
Right.
But regardless, you understand the concept of, is that Price is Right?
Yes, it is.
That's pretty nice. Anyway, there's a big difference between the Gezel. That's supposed to be the Gezel that's there from ants. So, what's shot? So we stand the Gemara, this is unbelievable for our reaction. There's a huge difference between the Gezel of ants that we would have learned from ants and the Gezel that a Kadosh Baruch Hu put in the Torah. Here's an idea. An ant has a law. You're not allowed to take away food from another ant. But to take away from human beings. Yeah. To take away from another min, call him Arba Meshuvach. Anybody who does more than that, Harizah Meshuvach, that's the best thing in the world. Keep taking away and taking away and taking away from one and the other, and it's the best thing. Ants take away from other creatures. They just don't take away from themselves. That's the ant's Torah. The ant's Torah tells you, do not steal from people that are like you. Do not steal from these types of people that are among your kind. But anybody else, it would be mutter to steal from completely. Well, we know that our Torah tells us, it's usher to steal from Jews and from goyim alike. There's no difference between the Geneva. There's one difference between a Jew and a goy, and it deals with oxen. It's the Gemara Bava Kama Daf Lamed Zayin. But other than that, it's also to be able to steal from a guy. It's also to be able to take anything away from a guy. And for that, it's the exact same thing. I'm sorry?
From an animal,
what do you mean? If there's something there that they have a kinyan on, then you're correct. Then there'd be something there. You know how it's easy to take away something from a baby? Because there is no such thing as a kinyan by a kid unless it belongs to the father of that kid. If a kid picks something up in the street, In theory, are you allowed to take it away from that kid? You got an Aveda from the street. Because of Takanas Chachamim, right? There's a Takana that's out there. But in theory, it would be Mutter, and the only reason why we Asur it is because it looks bad, because people are stealing away from little kids. The fact is that from an animal that doesn't have an ability to make a Kinyan, there is no such type of idea. There is no such problem. There's no such thing. There's no issue that brought out there. Listen, there are laws that were made in stone. You know some of the laws that are made in stone. The crazy laws. You hit someone and you make them bleed. What's the halakha? You hit someone, you make them bleed. Halakha was? No. The guy in stone, the law was, the guy who hit the person gets money. Because he let his blood and he made him healthier. You hit somebody in the face, you punch him in the face, cause him to bleed, then you have to pay that guy. You just got punched. You have to pay the other guy for what just happened. You have to pay him because of that. Because why? I mean, he's a doctor. He's a doctor. He hurt you, but he caused something good to happen, so go ahead and pay him. That's the law of Sodom. You know what Eliezer Avin Avraham did? Eliezer Avin Avraham went down to Sodom. He's a Gemara Sanhedrin. Went down to Sodom. He heard about the laws of Sodom, and he got punched by somebody. Dragged the guy into court. They came into court, and the judge said, Eliezer, you got to pay that guy for what he did. So Eliezer Avin Avraham went up to the judge, punched him in the face, and caused him to bleed, and said, "You pay him instead. You said you go ahead and take the money that I owe that you owe me, and go give it to him." That's the idea. There was another one. Here's another one. Just an unbelievable law. If you cause a woman to miscarry. You punch a woman in the stomach and she miscarries. Law of Sodom. You ready for the law of Sodom? You have to impregnate that woman. You have to impregnate that woman. Well, you caused her to miscarry, right? It was your fault. So in order to take away, you have to be able to make sure that that woman is able to have a baby. So you go ahead and you take it. You make sure that that woman has a baby. It's crazy. But that's the law of Sodom. There are other laws. If you owned an ox, you only have to watch all the oxen of everybody else for one day. If you didn't own an ox, you have to watch everybody's oxen for 2 days. If you didn't own an ox, it was better to own an ox than what's to not own an ox. Just crazy laws that didn't make any sense. Because a human mishpat, a human judgment, especially in a place like Sodom where people are unbelievably, they're full of taiva, can easily be swayed by favoritism in one way or another. Can you believe there's a country in the world that only allows one child to be born per family? I mean, is that unbelievable? With the punishment being a whole, the way that I read it, it seemed like it was 2 years worth of a salary if you have another child, if you have a second child in China.
How kill the child?
I didn't read that part. I don't know if that's fully true. I'm not positive that's true. Well, I don't know what ends up happening in that case. I think you're fined. I think what ends up happening is you're fined, so that a lot of people. But can you believe there's a country that only allows one child per family? By law. By law, you are not allowed to have more than one child. The outside of China, that makes absolutely no sense. But if you're living there, and you're living in the squalid conditions that I guess the Chinese are living in, and you knew exactly what was going on, I guess that would make sense to them. Because a mishpat that's made by a human being is definitely fallible. While something that's made by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is something that we'd have in the Torah, would be infallible. Now that might be able to, sometimes we don't understand it completely, and we look at it and we say, well, I'm not so sure, I don't get how this works, I don't get how that works, I'm not so sure. But it is, we have to understand it as being infallible in some way, shape, or form. While those who are lawyers in this room are going to have to admit that at some point, the law, the American law is going to be fallible. Here is the classic example of the difference between an American, not even an American, but a law made by the rest of the world versus the law of the Jews. What happens if somebody steals something in any other culture in the world? You steal something and you can't pay it back. By Arab countries, you cut off his hand, sometimes the arm, right? Without a question. No questions asked. You could even just be suspected or accused of stealing something and you lose your hand. I said very, very low, right? Because obviously, you know, you cut off your hand for something like this. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy to be able to happen. But fine, that's the law by those types of situations. If you go ahead and do that, you're going to get your hand chopped off. In America, aha, the great America, you get caught stealing. What ends up happening to you?
Jail.
Get thrown into jail. Now, what ends up happening when you come out of jail? You come out of jail, you're not rehabilitated at all. I mean, maybe you're a little bit, you know, you're a little bit calmer because you have to go up to the board and you have to explain. Maybe you're a little bit knocked down a little bit. You're a little bit more subservient to other, whatever, stronger guys. That's a possibility. But regardless, you're not rehabilitated in your theft. There's no way you can get over your thievery. What's going to be? You're going to come out of jail. You're going to try to get a job. Everybody's going to see that you went to jail. Everybody's going to realize you're not going to be able to get a job. So what's that going to lead you to? You're going to end up being in the same position they were in before. You still can't make any money. You don't know what in the world you're going to do. You were away for so many years from your family. Your family's gone. Your entire city, you're gone. There's nothing you can do. That's the system that you're led into. Now, sometimes people think about that before they do it, but usually people don't think about it. They go into it and they're gone for life. There's no way that they can bring themselves back without a miracle, without tremendous help from the outside world. Jewish form. What is the Jewish form of what happens to a guy who steals something and isn't able to pay it back? He becomes an eved. He's sold into slavery. What happens when he's sold into slavery? It's unreal what the Torah prescribes. Go into the guy's house. Now remember, the guy who buys him has to be a rich man. So a rich man is buying a ganav, a known ganav. A ganav was caught with two Edom who went up to him and said, you know, if you steal that thing, then you're going to be sold as a slave if you don't have any money. The guy's like, I'm doing it anyway. And he goes into this rich guy's house. Goes into this rich guy's house. Not only is he given everything he needs, and not only that, there's one pillow in the house. Who gets the pillow? The slave. One suit in the house for Shabbos. Who gets the suit? The slave. One piece of steak in the house. Who gets that steak? It goes to the slave. The slave gets everything good. Better than the master himself. And aside from that, the master has to take it upon himself to support the wife and kids of that guy. He's got to be there for 6 years. 6 years altogether. Or if he buys himself out a little bit earlier. But who would want to buy themselves out? You make connections. You're making connections with the rich people among them because you're the slave who's serving them at the party. So when you do leave after 6 years, you end up knowing everybody who's the high echelon in the culture. Culture, and you'd be able to go up to them and say, listen, I'm looking for a job. It's no longer, oh, you've got that shame of being a guy who was in jail who doesn't have anything, a guy who's just, you know, did something stupid. You're now known as a guy who's working for other people. It's the greatest system. Now you think to yourself, but then why wouldn't people steal? Why wouldn't people go ahead and steal? Here is the difference between the mishpat of Bnei Adam and the mishpat of Elohim, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember, HaMishpat LeElohim Hu, et mishpatim bal yada'um. They don't know mishpatim, as you told me yesterday, Benyel, and it's quoted by the Sfas Emes and the Chiddush Arim, mishpatim bal yada'um. Where do we say that? And we say it in Halukah, right? Halukah number 2, I believe it is. They don't know what it means to have a law. The pshat is that we believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and this is about the Baal Shem Tov's idea. We believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is behind every law that he himself made. That if something happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll take it upon myself. I'll make sure that nothing bad happens. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying. Well, when it comes to people, when it comes to us, when it comes to what we do, we have no chance of being able to help the guys. So we have to make as much... What's the word? Decentive? I don't know what it is. As much punishment as we can to make sure they won't do it again. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, listen, I'll let you just do what I say. Make these laws happen. Don't mess over the guy for life. If the guy wants to do it because he's just that type of a person, I'll take care of him. Says God, he's mine. And I'll deal with him in my own way. And if you have belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules the world entirely, then you know the judge doesn't really matter. Even if the judge says, all right, sir, go ahead. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish the guy for what he's done, for the things that he's done, for his sins, for anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to get involved. Our real deterrent, the thing that knocks a guy off from doing what he's doing, is God, not the judges, not the punishment. It's the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in everything we do. And even if a murderer gets off the hook, we have to sit there and believe and say to ourselves, don't worry, God is punishing O.J. Simpson. It's going to happen in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. So, I know now.
For Gaila. You can't say that, you know, and I don't mean to say it, it's going to sound, but the Torah is better than the other systems because the U.S. couldn't incorporate the Torah system because they don't have the elements of divine intervention. So they have to figure out a way.
You're correct. You're 100% right. I'm not saying that that's a problem. The issue is that once a person goes and looks at things and says, well, these mishpatim make a lot more sense to me. No, you're taking one thing. You're not taking one big thing into account. The mishpatim of the Torah that are made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu include the fact that God is involved. Every single one of them include the fact that Hashem is taking care of all the loose ends that you might not understand. Why is it that an ox that gores after one time, two times, maybe even three times, according to Rebbe, that it only pays half price? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of it. Why is it that somebody who kills accidentally is sent to Golos? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved. And there's some other things that are going on. Hashem ina liyado. Hashem is going to make sure that those who kill accidentally but don't have any Edom, those who kill on purpose and don't have any Edom, are going to be found in the same inn. And what's going to be? The guy who killed on purpose is going to be underneath the ladder. The guy who killed accidentally is going to be climbing up a ladder. He's going to fall down off the ladder, fall on the guy who killed on purpose, and he's going to kill him. Because we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there at all times. That's what it means behind it. It's the fact that Asher Kassim Lifneim, these are the laws that you can put in front of the judges. But these are not the only laws in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything.
But these ones that you're talking about are only the Mishpatim in the Torah. It's not things that the rabbis figure out in the Gemara.
Well, even the Rabbanim that are figuring it out in the Gemara are basing themselves on Pesukim. When they're basing themselves on Pesukim, that means they're basing themselves on Hashem's judgments, which means that they're 100% from the Torah. They're not making it up on their own. There's no rabbi who's getting out there and saying, I'm trying to figure it out. Listen, there's a halacha by Shul. Okay? It's unbelievable. Let's say, Yaakov, you're mowing my lawn. I hired you to mow my lawn. You have a car and you drive your car over. And I say to you, Yaakov, can I borrow your car to go to Jewel? Okay? I borrow your car. According to some shittos, if I drive your car into a pole, a stop sign, and I come out and I'm like, oh man, I really shouldn't have done that. I go back to you, I'm putter, a shoel, when it's balav emo, when the owner of that object that you borrow is working for you, is putter even in negligence, according to some shitas. That's crazy. He might be mazik involved. That case might be a little bit because it's mazik involved. But negligence, you'd be putter from. Why? Because balav emo is working for you at the time when you borrowed it. How does that make any sense? Where does that go? It's a gzeres hakasuv. Perakas shoel on bava metzia. Perakas shoel. This means that there's something going on behind the scenes because there's no svar behind it. Nothing. There is no svar, no rishonim, no achronim come up with a svar for balav emo. Now one svar. Everybody says gzeres hakasuv. Nothing to talk about. Ains Parakabam Mitzvah, you can go check it out. It's the craziest thing in the world, craziest concept in the world. And for some reason, that's a mishpat. That's in our parsha of mishpatim, to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind every law that he makes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going behind the scenes and taking care of it. Often, says the Baal Shem Tov, there's Gilgulim involved. I have to tell you this story. Number one is from the Bushasha Rebbe. This is a small little story. I've read this in, I believe it was one of Reb Pesach Kron's books, but it said the following. The Bushasha Rebbe was extremely makbid on Yayin Nesach. He would never drink wine that was even looked at by a non-Jew. Obviously, he wasn't dealing with wine that was cooked, with mevushel wine, you know, with that type of pasteurized wine. Dealing with yayin nesach, he never drunk anything that had anything, and he was makbid his entire life not to do anything to do with yayin nesach. He knew that he needed a tikkun, a certain type of tikkun, and he knew it was for yayin nesach. So he made sure never to. At the end of his life, he was sick and in bed, and they gave him a little bit of medicine. And he was sort of awake, sort of not awake, almost completely gone. And they gave him a certain medicine, they put it down his throat, immediately he opened up his eyes and he said, Oi, Yayin Nesach. And then immediately he died. He immediately died afterward. They checked up and they saw that there was Yayin inside that medicine. Yayin inside that medicine that was put inside that medicine. And unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there was nothing that the Bushasha Rebbe could have done in that. Absolutely nothing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ina Liyado. We have no idea why. It's a famous story that they say about the Rebbe. And then the Baal Shem Tov. This is a little bit of a story. So here we go. There were two men. They were very, very rich. Very, very rich. Okay? Reuben and Shimon. They were both brothers with one another. They moved away from one another. Okay? Reuben was living in his town. Everything was all good. He had a lot of money. All of a sudden, a man came to him and he recognized him, looked at him, and he said, That's Shimon. He goes up to him and says, Shimon, is that you? I don't know if they were brothers, good friends, whatever it was. He said, Shimon, is that you? He said, yes. He said, Oy vey, what happened to you? His clothes were tattered, his clothes all ripped. And he said, please, I can't talk about it right now. Reuben brings him over to his house. He makes a huge suda, huge party. Everything is all good. But there's a beginning to this story. And there's a start that goes way behind this story. Here's what happened. Man comes over to the Baal Shem Tov. This man has a ton of money. He's got a bunch of kids. He's a Talmud Chacham Shein Kamo. He knows Tur Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh. He goes up to the Baal Shem Tov and he sits down in front of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says to you, what can I do for you? So the man says, toward the end of the Baal Shem Tov's life. So the man turns to the Baal Shem Tov and said, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't need anything. I'm extremely wealthy. I have sons and son-in-laws who are tremendous Talmud Chacham who are very, very rich. I have a lot of grandkids. I myself have learned a lot of Torah. I really don't need anything from you. I'm toward the end of my life. I'm very happy where I am, extremely happy where I am. You know, I just came to see your face. I just wanted to see your face, saying to the Baal Shem Tov. So Baal Shem Tov looked at him and said, you don't want any bracha? Nothing at all? And he said, no, just wanted to come to see you. I've never seen you before. So Baal Shem Tov says, you came to see my face? Look at my face as I tell you this story. Two men, Reuben and Shimon, both rich, move away from one another. Reuben sees Shimon, he grabs him, he puts him inside, pulls him, brings him inside his house. He makes a huge suda. Huge suda, invites everybody that he knows, brings him in, sits Shimon down at the front of the table, bathes him, gets everything ready, puts him in nice clothing, sits him down at the head of the table right by him. In the middle of the meal, when everything is going on, he turns to him and he says, what happened? Shimon tells him, I went down in my business. I don't know what happened. I made a bad deal, then another bad deal, and I lost everything. I've got nothing. Reuben said, don't worry about it. After the suda's over, I'll take care of you. Suda finished. He goes and he takes out his ledger with all of his money, and he splits it in half. Takes half the money for himself, gives half the money to Shimon. Shimon's like, please, no, you don't have to do that. Reuben's like, no, please, I want to. Shimon's like, fine, give it to me. And Shimon takes half of the money of Reuben. Okay, Shimon leaves with half that money. Reuben stays. Reuben becomes extremely poor. Shimon, on the other hand, all of a sudden became extremely rich in whatever town he went to. Reuben says, you know what? This happened to me before Shimon came to me. I'm going to go to him. So Reuben goes over to Shimon. And the Baal Shem Tov looks up at the guy and says, you said you came to see my face. Look at my face as I tell you the story. Reuben goes and visits Shimon. As he goes into Shimon's house, he knocks on the door, the huge door, huge mansion. And the butler comes to the door and says, yes, can I help you? He says, my name is Reuben. I'm here to see Shimon. I'm an old friend of his. The butler comes back and says, my master says he doesn't know who you are. He says, please, I lent him money. I really need some help. Please go back and tell your master. I really need some help. Comes back. Butler comes back. My master says he doesn't know who you are. Here's a coin for your trouble. Gives him one coin. Reuben's like, I can't believe he just did that to me. How would he not see me? But he was starving. He goes out into the marketplace, sees a deal, buys it, sells it, makes money, makes more money, goes back to his town, makes a ton of money, becomes richer than he ever was before. Shimon, on the other hand, became poor again. Shimon comes to his house. Reuben now knows what it's like to be poor. So he opens up a house for the poor. And one day he's going through that house of the poor, feeding them, giving them food, giving them clothing, giving them whatever, and he sees Shimon again. He says, Shimon, what happened to you? Shimon says, you know, I can't believe, I'm so embarrassed that this has to happen. I know, I remember you came to the house and I didn't want to see you. I was so taken up by my money. I don't know what to do. I'm so poor again. So Reuben said, okay, I want to do the same deal that I made with you before. However, I want to make a shtar. I want to make a shtar with a contract with you that says that I give you half my money. If I need it, I want the money back. Shimon said, please, anything. I don't care. I'll do anything. Just, yes, I'll sign the contract. They pull out the contract, write it all up. Shimon leaves with half the money. Reuben goes down in his business. Reuben decides, I've got to collect. I've got to go back and get my money. Baal Shem Tov looks at the guy and says, you said you came to see my face. Look at my face as I tell you this story. He goes over to Shimon. And he asks Shimon, he goes up to Shimon, he goes up to the house, knocks on the door again. The butler comes to the door, I don't know if it's the same butler, comes to the door and he says, yes. He said, my name is Reuben. Goes back, he says, my master says he doesn't want to see you. He says, tell him I have a shtar, I'll take him to Beis Din. And he comes back, my master says he doesn't want to see you. Reuben didn't want to take Shimon to Beis Din. He was his friend, he's not going to take his friend to Beis Din. He said, it's not that big of a deal. Goes back to his town, lives in poverty for the rest of his life. Both Reuben and Shimon die. They die and they go up to Beis Din Shalmaila. When they get up to Beis Din Shalmaila, Beis Din makes a psak, and it's an obvious psak. Shimon, who wouldn't give away the money, is going straight to Gehenna. Reuben, who kept giving away his money and didn't care, he's going straight to Gan Eden. And Reuben gets up and he says, please, I want to speak something in front of the court. So the Baal Shem Tov looks at the guy and he says, you said he came to see my face. Look at my face as I tell you this story. And Reuben says, how can I enjoy Gan Eden when I know my friend is in Gehenna because of me? How can I enjoy my Gan Eden this way? Either we both go to Gehenna, or we both go to Gan Eden. It's one of the two. But we're not splitting up like this. Shimon is like, oh my gosh. You can't imagine. Beis Din Shalmaila looks at him and says, we can't do that. He deserves Gehenna, you deserve Gan Eden. There's nothing we can do. We can't send you back there. So the Beis Din Shalmaila says, fine, we'll do it in a different way. We'll send them back in a Gilgal. And here's the deal. Reuven is going to be sent back as a poor man who's going to be collecting throughout all the towns. Shimon is going to be sent back as an extremely rich man. In order for Shimon to gain Gan Eden, all he has to do is give tzedakah to Reuven. If he gives tzedakah to Reuven, then they'll both go straight to Gan Eden. And if not, then Shimon's going to have to go to Gehenna, and then Reuven, you have nothing to complain about. Reuven agreed to it, and that's how it was. Reuven became a very poor man, Shimon became a very rich man. Shimon lived up on top of a very big hill. He became extremely rich and very, very well known. Reuven came to visit him once. He was told that there was a person who's a very, very rich man. Shimon says, oh, I have to go. Reuven says, I have to go meet him. He's a new Reuven. He says, I have to go meet him. And he said, don't go to that guy. Don't go to that guy. He's not going to give you any money. He said, I'm going to go anyway. Climbs up all the steps, comes out the door, knocks on the door. Somebody answers the door. Somebody answers the door and calls over his master. The master comes to the door and says, how can I help you? He says, please, I'm collecting for poor people in another town. The man says, I don't give this stuff. So the guy said, please, I'm starving. If you're not going to give me any money, please give me a little bit of food. I just want a little bit of food. I haven't eaten anything all day. So the man of the house, the master of the house said, no, I'm not. I have nothing to give you. There's no food in the house. Reuven who we now know as Reuven, is looking behind the guy and he sees a table full of food. Table full of food. There's obviously a huge feast that's about to go on. He says, come on, you have a whole food. You have a whole feast right over there. It's all on the table. Let me just grab something and I'll go. It's a couple of grapes. Let me grab something. Just a piece of bread. And the guy says, no, get out. And the poor man says, no, I'm coming in and I'm grabbing something. And he tries to push the owner of the house out of the way. The owner of the house is strong. This guy hasn't eaten anything all day. Owner of the house pushes him back. The guy falls backward, falls down the steps, and breaks his neck. The man of the house, who's really Shimon, will never get his tikkun in Olam Haba. Baal Shem Tov turns to the guy who was with him, and the guy who came to just see the face of the Baal Shem Tov started crying, tears going down his face. Rebbe, how was I supposed to know that that was the guy? How was I supposed to know that that's what I had to do? He came at a bad time. I didn't know I was supposed to give him any money. What am I supposed to do? The guy died. I didn't know what to do with him. Nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew where he came from. Nobody knows if he has a family. Nobody knows anything about him. So the Baal Shem Tov says, your job is to go make sure that he's buried in a tremendous burial place. And this happened a while ago. Make sure he's buried in a tremendous burial place. And then go and find his wife and kids. Scour the lands. Go into exile until you find his wife and kids. And when you find them, you have to feed them as if it's your own wife and kids. And that's the only way you'll get a tikkun. That is a little story from the Baal Shem Tov. Gotta love Baal Shem Tov's stories. The point is that sometimes there's something going on behind the scenes that have no shaychus to where we are right now. Absolutely no shaychus. There's not anybody who's going to know. There's no Baal Shem Tov nowadays. There's the Kal of Areva, and there are others. But you're not going to find too many people who are going to know exactly what you're doing. So you act as a good person. You act as you're supposed to do, and you do what you're supposed, what you think you're supposed to do, and you keep going. And as you go through your life, if you're doing the right thing, if you're acting in the right way, then things will be okay. That's when things are going to happen in the right way. Rav Moshe has a totally different view in how to apply the Torah to how to apply this entire idea of mishpatim. You know, people think that the Torah only applies to ruchnius, and there's no sheiches to anything, to anything gashmi really. Meaning, you sit there and you look at the Torah and you just say, like, okay, here's the idea. I have to learn all day, I have to daven all day, and that's it. And if I'm not doing that, if I go into business, then really there's no real issues that I have to deal with. But Rav Moshe says, it's obviously not true. There's no word, there's not one word in the Torah about learning all day long. Nowhere. It doesn't say that. It says, the only place where it says, v'agisa bo yomam v'layla, you should learn it all day and all night, is where? In Yoshua. Now, one word in the Torah. In fact, the only word in the Torah where it says that you should learn Torah is technically when you wake up and when you go to sleep. That's the only time you have a chiyuv to learn. That's the only time, because the rest of the day, you're working. The rest of the day, you're spending time on your goof. You're taking care of your goof in some way or another. The entire Torah, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, is defined by your gashmius. Is defined by what you do in this world, not by what you do in ruchnius. Not by the spirituality. This is the idea that Rav Moshe says. We're not monks. We're never supposed to be like monks. We're never supposed to be on that level. Our job is to deal with our gashmias, to work on it and perfect it in a way that we look at these mishpatim and say to ourselves, how is this going to apply in my daily life? How do I not? What should I do when it comes into a situation where there's a good deal to make, but it's going to involve some type of geneva? Where there's something that I could do, but it involves sheker? Or it's going to involve cheating? It's going to involve something like that. What do you do? That's the point behind the entire parsha. That this is what builds up your ruchnius. To not cheat, to not steal, to not lie, to not get involved. And that's the idea behind Naseh before Nishma, which is written at the end of this week's parsha. Naseh v'Nishma is not written in Parshas Yisro. It's written in Mishpatim. Because Naseh v'Nishma means do it, and then in the end, you'll understand why. In the end, you'll get how the ruchnius affects you. But at first, just do it. Knowing what you have to do is important, obviously. You got to learn in order to know what you have to do, and you have to daven to be able to prepare yourself to get in there. But the Ikar is how you act. That's what it means. That's the idea behind the Naseh v'Nishma in order to affect yourself and to bring you in there. Okay, turning the table completely. Rapo yirape, that you have a chiyuv to be healed. Rashi says the following, that there's reshus for a doctor to heal a person. Mikan nitin reshus l'rope l'rapo. So it's not brought down in Rashi here. It's an old Rashi Yeshana, and it's also brought down by the Gemara. But mikan nitin reshus l'rope l'rapo is that a doctor is able to heal. So what's pshat? What's pshat? You think that a doctor wouldn't be able to heal? The gross is an unbelievable line. A guy came to him once and said, the doctor said that I'm going to die. What am I going to do? What should I do? And the gross said he had no reshus to say that. A rope is reshus l'rapos. A doctor has rishus to heal you. He never has rishus to say that you're not going to be healed. You have no rishus to tell a person you're not going to be healed. That he doesn't have an ability to. And therefore?
No, I disagree.
And therefore, no, and therefore, any doctor that says that you're going to die, it's never for sure. That means you can still daven, says the girl. So you should daven for it and you should take care of it. What do you say? Come on, Dave.
I'm saying there's certain times where you have to use common sense, and it's actually immoral to tell someone, you know.
Oh, no. We're not saying the doctor shouldn't tell you. We're saying the doctor cannot paskin and say, you are going to die. There's always a chance to live. Meaning, he can say to you, it looks very likely that you're going to die.
Okay.
But say there's nothing to do, you're gone, you're hopeless. Never. That's what the girl is pointing out. Meaning, there's always something you can do. I could have given you story after story. I didn't want to... Just check out the Sefer Olim Lushabeach about people that are hopeless situations, hopeless cases. And everybody knows something about this, where there was, you know, a bit of cancer or something like that, and that all of a sudden was gone. Crazy cases, one after the other after the other. There's all cases like that. That's what the Gros says, number one. And says the Gros, says also that the other shot is the following.
I heard a story about the guy.
I'm sorry.
There's a guy who had AIDS, and then he got cancer, and he was about to be gone from the cancer, and they did this crazy treatment where they did blood transfusion. And then now it was a cure from the cancer, it was a cure from the AIDS. He's the first guy ever be cured from AIDS, yeah. His blood transfusion happened to be from...
Is it a Jewish guy or not Jewish
wearing
guy?
Wearing a bear's hat right now.
It was in Germany.
In Germany. You have crazy stories. Crazy stories. And each time, there's no such thing as no chance. That's what it's trying to say. Last mission in Kedushin says the following. It says, Tov Shavarofim LeGehenim. That the best of all doctors all go to Gehenim. That's a terrible line. I mean, that's absolutely terrible. How do you understand such a thing? How do you understand? So Rashi says, because they all have gaiva, they have no fear of death or any ramification of death, and they don't help out poor people. That's the line of Rashi.
What?
Says, yeah, it's a crazy line. Unbelievable line. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger. Here's what Rashi means. It's an unbelievable Rabbi Akiva Eger. Right there in the Mishnayos. What is the best midah, the best character trait for a doctor to have? The midah that makes him the greatest doctor in the world. I would say the exact opposite. A doctor who is an unav will do a terrible job. A terrible job. It's not even gaiva. It's cruelty. Achzorius. If a doctor says, looks at a person and knows that there's gangrene in the arm, and if he doesn't cut off the arm, it's going to spread to the body and he's going to die. So what does a doctor do? Doctor has to be cruel. What does it mean to be cruel? What does it mean to be cruel? That means that you got to cut off the arm sometimes.
It's nothing cruel. You're saving the guy's life.
Granted. But that's where the cruelty comes into play. You're using cruelty for something good. Here's the idea. Tov Shavarofim. The best thing that any doctor can have is... what sends most people to Gehenna. That's the idea. I mean, what makes the doctor not want to help the Aniyim? What makes him have that gaiva? What makes him have no fear of death or anything like that? That type of gaiva, that type of idea, is what sends him normally to Gehenna. If you want to check it out, at the very end of there's a Pharisee stroll in that Mishnah, in the end of Kedushin, that brings by Tosha Baruch and Gehenna, a whole story with Moshe Rabbeinu and a king and everything like that. You got to check out that story. Throughout the entire Gemara, you see a ton of refuos, different crazy refuos that are brought down that are supposed to help this way and that way. You've ever seen those? You know, you shave the head, the hair in the middle of your head, and you take a chicken and you split it in half, and you take the little blood and you put, and then you dip in the yarden 7 times. It's crazy stuff. That's to cure a headache. It's also Advil. It's unbelievable. Like what do you do with those refuels that are out there? So listen to this. There's a Rabbi Kida Eger in Yoredeya Shin Lamed Vav, Simon Shin Lamed Vav from the Maharil, says the following. It says it is usur to test any refuah mentioned in the Gemara. It's also to do any refuah that's ever mentioned in the Gemara, because no one knows exactly what they meant or how they meant it. And says the Maharil, people might make fun of them because Chazal didn't realize that it depends on the time and the place and the area. Sometimes these things worked in this area, but they didn't work in other areas. Says the Maharil, I don't even know how to say that, but regardless, people might make fun of this, so you got to be careful with it. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, there's one thing that you can do. Oh, by the way, the Yamshel Shlomo in Chulin Perachat Simen Yudbeis says that there's a cherem. There's a cherem. You get excommunicated if you do any of the refuels that are mentioned in the Gemara. If you do anything that's mentioned in the Gemara, a cherem to be able to do it. Because there's bad things that go on. Check out the Yamshel Shlomo also. Rabbi Akiva Eger says there's one medicine that works. One medicine that's mentioned in the Gemara. You ready for this? It's unbelievable. The chicken bone. You ever heard about the chicken bone? The Pesach Kohen has another story about this in one of his books. If a guy is choking on a chicken bone in his neck, and it's in his neck and it's stuck there and he can't get it out, what do? You take another chicken bone, a bone of that type, take a chicken bone, and you put it on his head. You place it on the person's head. And you say, Chad, Chad, Nochis, Bola, Bola, Nochis, Chad, Chad. It's in Shabbos, Samach, Zayin, and Aleph. Says Rabbi Kivager in the Ma'aril, that medicine has been tried, tested, and proven, and it works every time, and it's guaranteed to work, and you 100% can use it. No problems whatsoever. 100%. Right next to it. 100%. 100%. It's unreal. Rabbi Kivager promises. He says, I promise you this works. I promise you this works. Repeats that crone.
So
has it
in...
marrow
bone, it won't work.
What?
It has to be a chicken bone.
It says if you're choking on a chicken bone, you have to use a chicken bone. And by a fish bone, it's a different thing that you're supposed to say, but he doesn't say it works by the fish bone. It only is by the chicken bone. It's the only thing it works by. It's unreal. But who would say such a thing? Who would say it? Every medicine in the world, there's a cherem to do them. Cherem. This one, not only are you allowed to do it, it'll work. And this, what they, it's unbelievable. Repisa Krohn has a story on it. That somebody did it in a huge restaurant in New York. Somebody did it. The guy was choking on a bone, picked up the thing, put it on, and he wasn't dying. It wasn't like a Heimlich thing. I don't think, it must be that it's like stuck there, like he was extremely uncomfortable. And he didn't know what to do. And he took the bone, put it on his head, said, Chad Chad Nochis Bola, Bola Nochis Chad Chad. And immediately the bone went down. I can't tell you anything like it. Rabbi Kivager, Yoredea, Shin Lamed Vav from the Maharil. That's what he brings down from over there. It's unreal. Shalos Tshuvas Chassam Sofer, and also the Tzitz Eliezer Chilek Yud Zayin, as well as the Birki Yosef, they all bring down. Avadi, everybody knows you gotta go to doctors. Obviously, you have to use it. Yeah, gotta go to doctors. You have to use medicines. You have to do these types of things because we can't rely on Nisim anymore. You can't do in that type of thing. But you have to be talking when you go in that it's all good. Remember, when we say Virapo Yirape, it's with a little dot in the middle, right? The pay with a dogish. What do we say in our Shemone Esrei? The Shemone Esrei that deals with healing? Rifa'enu Hashem v'neirafe. Both of them are with a fa, with a fe instead of a po. What's the difference? Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya that when Hashem does it, it's easy and it's good. It's very soft. It's Rifa'enu Hashem v'neirafe, then everything will be okay. But when a doctor has to do it, then it's harsh. There's harsh medicines. There's castor oil. There's all the bad stuff. That's rapo, yirape, as if it's a harsh lushen. That's the difference between them. I will end off with one little thing. The Satmar Rav used to go to a doctor. And we'd go up to the doctor, and he'd say to the doctor, tell me exactly what limb is hurting me. Go up to the doctor, and he'd say, what limb is hurting him? So the doctor would look in his body, and he'd tell him, oh, it's this. And the Satmar Rav would get up, and he would leave. Because the Satmar Rav knew every mitzvah that was connected to which bone or which part of your body. So when he knew that that part of his body was hurting, he knew that he just had to work on that mitzvah. And once he did it, then it wouldn't be hurting him anymore. That's not for us. That's for the Satmar Rav to be able to do. Such an unbelievable thing altogether. We'll stop with that. What we talked about today was the difference between our Mishpatim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mishpatim. The difference between anything that we come up with versus HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in which he is involved. We can only do what's with Nahem, not more than that. And the judges can only do what's right there in front of them, and that's it. The Torah applies to Gashmias as well as Ruchnias, but more so to Gashmias. No mitzvah in the Torah to make a shul. No mitzvah in the Torah to sit in a base medrash all day long. And then issues within Ripoy. Issues with the Revoy, and we spent a little bit of time on that story with the Baal Shem Tov. Guys, have a good Shabbos.